Welcome to Financial Perspectives, the podcast. Join the team at Foster Group and our expert guests as we explore a variety of subjects that could impact your financial life. We will cover timely economic and financial market news, a wide range of personal financial planning ideas, and investment topics. Ultimately, we want to encourage educated optimism and do our best to provide valuable insights to help you navigate your financial journey with confidence. Please stick around at the end for important disclosure information. More information about Foster Group can be found in our ADV brochure at fostergrp.com.
Welcome and thanks for joining us. Today we're talking about something that's nearly impossible to ignore. So often we wake up to headlines about geopolitical events that cause feelings of uncertainty. In 2026, we face tension in Greenland, military intervention in Venezuela, and heightened political rhetoric at Davos, just to name a few, and it's only February. So here's the thing, this isn't new. And while political developments can distract from underlying market fundamentals, long-term market performance is largely shaped by robust corporate earnings and economic strength. I'm in the studio today with Kent Kramer, Chief Investment Officer at Foster Group, to unpack what is driving these ongoing concerns, provide insights on how history informs us on this topic, as well as discuss how we incorporate uncertainty into our investment philosophy at Foster Group. Kent, thanks for joining me.
No, it's fun to be here.
Yes, absolutely. And, this is just something that our advisors are hearing a lot of questions about at the moment. Right. It's in the headlines a lot. So just how can we filter this noise?
Well, it's really hard to miss, isn't it? I mean, right now, I was just looking at, well, if you're tracking it all, you might be paying attention, let's say, silver and gold.
Right, yeah.
So on January 30th, silver's been on a run, and then all of a sudden it's down 30%, over 30% in one day.
Yeah.
So the level of volatility and uncertainty is out there, and you can kind of understand why. We have a president who's just, no matter what you think about his policies or his style, he is more vocal and more verbal and more aggressive than I think what the world has been used to from U.S. presidents. Mm-hmm. And you can see that. You mentioned the struggle in Davos. Well, all over the news, there are statements coming from our president and then world leaders kind of reacting to that going, hey, what are we supposed to do? This is a little new. To the point where they're almost questioning, is the alliance going to stay? What are the trade deals going to be like? We saw this a little bit, last year with the tariffs. We'll talk about that in a minute. Somewhere in that mix, too, there's this AI bubble thing going, all right, people talk about that a little bit. It's still possible. And then we see images on the screen of like the immigration enforcement actions and just the general public unrest in Minnesota. And so that all together just, I think, makes people feel a little angsty. Mm-hmm. So when you ask the filter, what do we do about it? I tend to think what I wish we all had was some noise-canceling headphones, the really good ones, where we can just screen out some of these things, not because they're not important, but because when they start to influence the way we think about how we're going to invest today or tomorrow, that noise is not really helpful for us.
So true. We all need those headphones so we can pick and choose the headlines we want to hear about, right?
I think so.
Yeah. There it is. Just the frequency of headlines is remarkable. What about 2025? And so it was, kind of a case study year as we look back. What lessons did we learn about volatility last year?
I think that's right. That's the thing to think about is this is happening today. What should I look to in the past that maybe is like today? Mm-hmm. We don't have to look very far back because just last year in April, when President Trump, after he was inaugurated, he shortly announced that there was going to be some new tariff policies. And then on April 2nd, what he called Liberation Day, he announced just some broad, sweeping, very high tariff numbers. And immediately, economists and pundits were saying this is going to cause all kinds of inflation, markets are going to do poorly, economies are going to tank. It was just, this is truly, truly bad news. And markets went down for 5 days straight. And then what we learned is the president, among other things, he does pay attention and listen to markets. And I think we learned, too, that he sees himself as a negotiator. So sometimes when he starts in one place, he's like his opening volley, if mm-hmm. you will. And he's waiting to see what the response is going to be. Now, we may not like that negotiating style in terms of how it makes us feel, but I do think that's a style that we're learning that's kind of how he operates.
Yeah.
So what happened is the market responded very negatively to those tariff announcements. And then the president kind of came back around with his economic advisors and say, well, we're going to do these things as well. And then adjustments started to happen. And sure enough, you saw markets respond favorably to the announced adjustments. The thing to learn from last year was, if you had responded to all those economic dire predictions, in other words, we had one piece of data, that first tariff announcement, people immediately extrapolated this was going to be a bad year, things were going to move horribly. If you would have reacted to that and gotten out of equity markets, you might have missed a little short-term pain, maybe, if you reacted quickly. But if you had been out of the market for all of last year, you would have missed a very, very good year to be a stock market investor, or for that matter, a bond market investor. It was just a great year.
Yeah. So it was a year of learning. I mean, the markets learned how to respond to President Trump's style.
Yes.
And President Trump sort of learned what the market is going to tolerate. And I guess the thing we need to remember, too, is that the good thing about the markets is that sort of everyone's interests are aligned, right?
They
Whether
are.
You're a shareholder in
yes.
the company, you're running the company, or you are affecting policy, right?
Absolutely. The politicians, they want the economy to do well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, for sure, because that's what keeps them in office and allows them to advance policy. So if the market does poorly, economy does poorly, people start losing jobs, whatever it might be, those things reflect bad on whoever is currently in charge. And, you know, we'll talk about this in a bit. They get voted out.
Yeah. Well, let's go there next. And so if we talk about history now and learning lessons from history, what does history tell us about politics and elections when it comes to market performance?
Yeah. So great question. One that gets asked all the time. And every 2 years, we update a series of numbers just to see if there's any iteration. You know, is it a Republican president and Democratic Congress flip? Is there some party combination that is better for the market or not? And what we find is there's just really not a combination that is better all the time. Actually, the most important thing is that people stay invested through whoever is in the presidency and whoever controls Congress.
Mm-hmm.
There's a chart that we like that shows returns since 1950. If you had invested $1 in 1950 and only had it invested when Republicans were in the presidency, your dollar would have been worth $9. If you had done that and only been invested when Democrats were in office, wow, you would have thought, hey, this was the magic formula, because now my dollar's worth $46, a lot more than those Republicans. But if I just left my dollar invested no matter who was president since 1950, now it's worth $417.
Stay in the market.
So what we see is it's all about the time in the market, not who's in the presidency in terms of our success as an investor. And that's really important for people to keep in mind.
Yeah. I mean, the system is remarkable, right? It has stood the test of time. It's not perfect, but there are checks and balances.
Yes.
What about just, you know, there, with technology, there's just been a change in the cadence of information, the frequency of information, and how we're receiving it. How has the market and investors adapted to that or not adapted to that, in your opinion?
Yeah. I think from a political lens, if you think about our system, we have a system that can turn over fairly rapidly. I think of our democratic system almost like a market in itself. So if you consider votes as capital, then we use our votes to basically buy or sell policies and politicians. So if things are going poorly, then the majority of people are going to say, this is not working. We're going to sell this set of policies and politicians, or we're going to buy another set. And it happens every 2 years. So every 2 years, the House of Representatives can turn over 100%. Every 2 years, the Senate could turn over by a third, and every 4 years, the presidency can turn over. So in terms of the kind of responsiveness of politics to the marketplace of voting, I think it's a fairly short window that actually voters can respond, kind of this democratic market, if you will, which should, I think, give us a little bit of encouragement, because if things are really going off the rails, then voters every 2 years can really change the dynamic.
Yeah. So exercise your power to vote, right? And
absolutely.
Get your opinion out there as far as how you want policy to affect markets.
Absolutely. I just, one thing you said that I just was reminded of too, if you think about checks and balances, I think what we saw last year, you know, we talk about 2025, that was kind of a check and balance from the market to the political system. So again, there's this interaction between markets and the political system. It's in everybody's best interest, as we've said, you know, for the markets to do well and the economy to do well. And politicians, they certainly are aware of that.
Yeah, all good points. Let's move on now and talk a little bit about, you know, the topic here is uncertainty. And we've talked about it a lot in the light of how it's negative, but when is uncertainty good for investors? Yeah. Or maybe what's misunderstood there?
Yeah. I think, you know, with uncertainty, it feels bad. We're talking about the emotional impact of uncertainty. We feel bad. We feel like there's too much risk, mm-hmm. something it could go wrong. But as an investor, if you can kind of set that feeling aside for a minute, what you realize is, one, uncertainty is always present. It's not something that we can do away with. Mm-hmm. And we know this. We know this with our health, with weather, with markets. There's no lack of uncertainty in the world. Mm-hmm. For investors, the thing about uncertainty is that uncertainty is what makes higher expected returns possible. Because then as an investor, we're asked by companies to either buy their stock or put money, you know, lend them money through bonds. And what we have to do as an investor is go, well, the future of that company is uncertain. How uncertain is it? The more uncertain it is, the higher return we're going to demand, we're mm-hmm. going to expect. So we'll actually drive a price lower if we think there's more risk, because in order to get me to invest, I need a higher return. In other words, this thing is going to start lower, so when it goes up, I'm getting more mm-hmm. return. But without that uncertainty, there'd be no reason for me to bid the price down, because there's no risk of what's going to happen in the future. Think about a bank deposit. Bank deposits are very secure, so they pay a very low rate of interest. If I invest in a venture capital company, we don't know if that thing's going to succeed or fail. So the prices are low, usually at the front end, but the reward can be very high from my investment.
Yeah. I mean, investments 101, right? We need to just remember the risk-reward trade-off.
Yeah.
Always.
And I think to remember, too, this idea of uncertainty is always present. Mm-hmm. We just don't always feel it. We don't always see it. So, you know, we started off by talking about the sources of uncertainty mm-hmm. in the world right now.
Yeah.
We feel them because they're in the news. We're watching it happen in real time. A question to consider is, let's go back to 2020 and COVID. Not really. I don't want to go back. But let's put our memory back there for a minute and go, was the world more uncertain the week before the first case of COVID or the week after the first case of COVID?
Definitely after, right?
You would think, you felt like it was more uncertain after, but the uncertainty existed mm-hmm. the week before. We just didn't see it.
Right.
So I think about this. There's a great story about the Deepwater Horizon, that kind of, you know, the biggest oil spill in world history. It was a mile underwater when that thing blew. So again, you think about 10 minutes before, was it more or less uncertain? 10 minutes after, was it more or less? In some ways, I would say after the explosion or after the first case of COVID, yeah, the uncertainty felt more present. But in a way, uncertainty was starting to go down even at that point, because as soon as we see the problem, we can start to work on it. Before we see the problem, it's almost like the risk is the highest mm-hmm. because we don't see it.
So don't let your emotions drive your calculation of risk.
That's right. And recognize that uncertainty is always there. Even when you try to eliminate it, you just can't eliminate it. You're trying to manage uncertainty and then take, you know, expose yourself to as much risk as you're comfortable with or as you need to generate the rate of return that's going to, you know, achieve your financial goals.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking about this article we ran across in the last couple.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, exactly. You read a great article about this very principle. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've been talking about this in preparation for this FP. And so Jim Paulson, you know, he published this research piece showing that if you use the U.S. Economic Uncertainty Policy Index.
Quite a mouthful.
Right, yeah. It is. And look at that and chart that against the S&P 500. When that index was in its top quintile, you had the best next 1 month return out of the S&P, right? And it was to the tune of like 19%+.
Yeah.
And in the bottom two quintiles, it was just over 7%. And then if you just took the bottom 8%, you know, the rest of the time, other than the top quintile, it was like 11. And so right. It kind of goes against the conventional wisdom, right? And that right. You want to embrace uncertainty because it's actually good for your portfolio.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a little bit, you know, Warren Buffett talks about in the past, he said, you know, you want to be greedy when other people are fearful
yes. And
probably, you know, pull back when other people are greedy because it what it does to prices. Mm-hmm. So when uncertainty is the highest, it can make prices go down, which become the buying opportunity.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like it in the moment.
Always,
it doesn't
right?
feel like in the
but
moment.
But you need to embrace it.
You
right?
need to embrace it as part of the investment process.
Yes. Well, that leads us into the next question. So we've talked about it high level, and I just really want to bring it down to, you know, Foster Group specific. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about philosophically at Foster Group, how do we incorporate uncertainty into our philosophy? I mean, you've been an architect of this yeah. investment philosophy here, and so give us some wisdom on this.
Recently, I asked some of our advisors to think about putting their investment strategy into 10 words. And my 10 words are, you want to be a short-term agnostic and a long-term optimist.
So good.
Because I think the idea with the short-term is people are always trying to make predictions, and generally, trying to predict is not a good investment approach, mm-hmm. especially in the short term. So we want to be fairly agnostic, meaning I'm going to be a little protective. If I need things to happen in the short term, I'll take a less risk on those short-term aspects. Mm-hmm. But my long-term goals, I can use a higher risk asset. I can use equities long-term to get there. So we start there. We kind of recognize that uncertainty is necessary for longer rate of return. Then we say, let's make a plan. We can talk about that a little bit more. But really, we want to focus in on this idea of let's not get into the game of prediction, because that prediction kind of loading up for one outcome, if that one outcome doesn't happen, things can go badly.
Yes. And you have to get the trade right twice. Right?
Yes. Right. Going in and coming out.
Yes. And let the market be an ally, right?
Exactly.
So. And then finally, just last step, even a little bit tighter than if we think about what are our advisors doing specifically to sort of implement this philosophy and incorporate uncertainty into.
Yeah. The first response or the first step always is to make a plan. It's to plan.
Plan again.
It's like have a plan. And that plan needs to really encompass all of your circumstances, you know, not just how much money do you have today, but what does your cash flow look like in the future? What's your subjective attitude mm-hmm. towards risk? When are you going to need things to happen? All those things, your personal circumstances, where you are today. I like to say, you know, we can't go back and redo the past. We have to plan from where we are today. Mm-hmm. And so if we're doing a good job of planning from where we are today, kind of outlining those goals, then there's a very high likelihood, if you're doing a good job of building a portfolio, that you're going to build it with a mix of assets that address kind of giving you a degree of short-term certainty where you need it, mm-hmm. but still long-term growth where you need it to achieve those goals. So start with planning, and then you get to the part about embracing uncertainty and trusting in markets.
Yeah, and our advisors will work with clients and figure out what's best for their individual risk tolerance, right?
Yeah.
And evaluate, and if people feel uncertain about things, talk to the advisors. I mean, they're very well versed on this embracing uncertainty
Absolutely.
Philosophy.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that was great. Are there any sort of last words or wrap up that you want to offer?
I think probably I just say two things wrapping up. One is with the political uncertainty, I think, that's out there that we all feel. You want to keep in mind that this isn't new. It may feel new because it's the most recent example. And it is true that things are noisy right now. But remember that in terms of those long-term investment returns and the markets that are worth, both the political markets and the financial markets, you know, it's very hard to predict the future, but the long-term history is still in our favor. It's possible, very, very possible and reasonable mm-hmm. to be a long-term optimist when it comes to returns. And the other thing I would say is, it was a quote I read recently by James Clear, and I thought it kind of it gave a different spin to our idea of embracing uncertainty. He wrote this. He said, the ultimate form of preparation is not planning for a specific scenario, but a mindset that can handle uncertainty. And I like that idea of you're not trying to plan for a very specific scenario. That's prediction. Mm-hmm. But you're developing a mindset that can really handle, or what we would say, actually embrace the uncertainty. When we can do that, we can kind of maintain our optimism. We can maintain our balance, if you will, going mm-hmm. through these things. You know, sometimes we will need to put in those noise canceling headphones because there's just too much noise
there
around
is.
Us.
Yes.
And remember that we've made a long-term plan, and this portfolio is built to go through all different kinds of environments. the ones we can't predict.
Mm-hmm. And I know you speak so often about educated, optimistic mindset, and it really just comes back to that, doesn't it?
I believe that it does, and I believe there's a rational reason to be that educated optimist.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your insights today. We really love to hear what you have to say on all these topics.
No, it's very fun to talk with you about it.
Yeah, thanks. So as we wrap up, it's worth remembering that uncertainty isn't a signal to step back. It's a reminder to stay disciplined. Markets move through political cycles, policy swings, and constant headlines. Yet markets have consistently rewarded those who stay invested. Our system is resilient. Our markets are adaptive, and uncertainty itself often creates the very opportunities that drive future returns. So as we move forward, we'll continue focusing on what we can control: thoughtful diversification, a long-term optimistic mindset, and an understanding that short-term volatility is simply part of the journey. And as always, if you have other topics you'd like to see us address, please let us know at our website, fostergrp.com. And also, if you're joining us on our podcast, would you consider giving us a like on your podcast app and share with your friends? Thanks for joining us today, and here's to embracing uncertainty with clarity and confidence.
The previous presentation by Foster Group was intended for general information purposes only. No portion of the presentation serves as the receipt of, or as a substitute for, personalized investment advice from Foster Group or any other investment professional of your choosing. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk, and it should not be assumed that future performance of any specific investment or investment strategy, or any non-investment related or planning services, discussion, or content, will be profitable, be suitable for your portfolio or individual situation, or prove successful. Foster Group is neither a law firm nor accounting firm, and no portion of its services should be construed as legal or accounting advice. No portion of the content should be construed by a client or prospective client as a guarantee that he or she will experience a certain level of results if Foster Group is engaged, or continues to be engaged, to provide investment advisory services. A copy of Foster Group's current written disclosure brochure discussing our advisory services and fees is available upon request or at www.fostergrp.com/disclosures.